Zoom a little zoom in a rocket ship. Off we go on a trip. Heading for the moon at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket. Zoom a little zoom, now we're almost free from the Earth's gravity. Zoom into the moon at terrific speed, because there is no friction. Soon we'll see if the moon is made out of green cheese. Ha, 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 ha. Zoom, we're here at the moon. Let's see what the moon is like.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome to my science project. It's November 15th. I'm your host, Anne, and I'll be with you for the duration of the show. You don't have any choice in that. And today's show is two-pronged. We've got a little bit about a band from New York called the Amygdaloids. And then, well, so here's the thing. I've got a couple of friends and, well, a family member, actually, who've recently released some music. And, of course, I wanted to play it on air. So I was looking for a good way that I could work that into a science theme. So what I've decided to do is to go with the theme of nepotism and altruism, which has a lot of big effects in animal biology. So I'm going to give you a few stories about animal biology, and of course I'll give you a human story as I play the music of my very own brother and also a friend. And so I think you'll enjoy that one way or another. Like I said, we've got some music from the Amygdaloids, and I also spoke to Joe Ledoux, one of the band members of the Amygdaloids, so we've got him talking about his songs and his science. There's a little bit about local events coming up, and to start things off, I want to tell you about a giveaway. My science project is initiating a competition giveaway. So basically, Julie and I were feeling a little lonely, cue violins, and a little in need of some listener feedback. So what we've decided to do is to solicit that from you, but we're going to try and tempt you with a little bit of swag. So we still have some passes for Science World left over from the funding drive. And if you get in on this little giveaway competition, then you yourself will get a couple passes to the Omnimax at Science World. So what you need to do is email us, Julie and I, of My Science Project, with your ideas for upcoming shows. Those ideas might be in the form of a science-related question. Maybe there's a certain topic that you're interested in. You know very well that Julie and I have our pet topics. We love to talk about monkeys, and we'll talk about monkeys today. We love to talk about robots, so why not share your pet science topic with us, and we'll see if we can swing together a show. Perhaps there's an event, science event, that you want to hear more about, maybe some rumors or research you want to hear more about, or equally inventions, new technology, whatever it is, send us your ideas. You can email us at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. So go ahead and do that with your ideas for some shows, and the first three responses that we receive will receive a pair of tickets to a double feature at Science World's Omnimax. And so that's for the extra big movie nights. And they take place on Friday and Saturday night, and you will get into a double bill. Right now on Fridays, they're showing Ride Around the World and Dinosaurs Alive. And on Saturday, they're showing Mummies, Secrets of the Pharaohs, and also Dinosaurs Alive on Saturday as well. So that's a great evening, isn't it? Ride Around the World is about horse and cattle peoples, so sort of the cultural angle of that with footage from Morocco, Spain, Mexico, Argentina, Patagonia, Texas, and on and on and on. Dinosaurs Alive uses scientifically accurate computer-generated animation to visit the earliest dinosaurs of the Triassic period and the monsters of the Cretaceous period. So that's Dinosaurs Alive, and Mummy's Secrets of the Pharaohs follows researchers and explorers as they piece together the archaeological and genetic clues of Egyptian mummies. So here's the deal. Email us at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. Email us your ideas for upcoming shows. Don't forget to include a mailing address. And if you're one of the first three respondents, you'll get a free pair of tickets to Science World's Omnimax Extra Big Movie Nights here in Vancouver. So once again, email myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca with your show ideas. So I mentioned earlier that today's show is all about the Amygdaloids. And the Amygdaloids are a rock band from New York City. And their music gets classified in a rather corny way as heavy mental. They actually once performed for John Nash, the mathematician portrayed in the film A Beautiful Mind. And after he heard them perform, he proclaimed that they are also psychoanalytic. Now, I don't want to spoil your first listen to this novel genre. I'm sure you're chomping at the bit to hear what it's all about. So I'll just share with you the first song from the Amygdaloids, All in a Nut.
In your brain.
That was the Amygdaloids doing It's All in a Nut, a fun little song that they've written. Now, the Amygdaloids are Joe Ledoux, who is a neuroscientist, and Nina Curley and Daniel Schiller, who are also neuroscientists as well. And the fourth member is named Tyler Volk, and he's particularly interested in environmental science and evolution. So those are the band members. And you might be wondering about the name. The Amygdaloids is a name that comes from the part of the brain called the amygdala. And the amygdala is generally regarded as a little nut-shaped area of the brain, sort of in the center underneath, that is responsible for emotional behavior. Now, I spoke recently with Joe Ledoux in New York City and asked him what the deal was with his name and how three neuroscientists and environmental scientists might get together and make a rockin' band.
Tyler and I have been playing guitar together for a couple of years. Just, you know, we'd get together once a month or so and just kind of strum along and sing a few songs. And we would fantasize about having a band, go out for beers afterwards, you know, talk about when we finally made it to Bleecker Street, which is the local area around NYU where there's little clubs and stuff that sometimes bands play. So then we started playing for Christmas parties for my lab, and it was just the two of us at first. And then 1 year we played, and after the party, Daniela said that she played drums, and would we like her to play with us next time? We said, sure. So we practiced together a couple of times, and then a party came up in the spring. I think it was probably spring 2006. So we played for that, and she joined us. And that was that until the summer when I got an invitation to give a lecture at something called the Secret Science Club, which was going to be held at a bar in Brooklyn called Union Hall. And they said, and we'll get some music afterwards for the entertainment. And I said, well, I'll bring the entertainment. And they said, great. So at that point, Daniela said, well, you know, Nina is a bass player and she's my research assistant, so why doesn't she join us? So she did, and so we had a full four-piece band for the Secret Science Club event. And so I gave the lecture, the band played. At that point, we had only a couple of original tunes, but our set was called Heavy Mental. We were playing a lot of things like, you know, Mother's Little Helper and Manic Depression. What else? Purple Haze. Anyway, it was classic rock songs that had some kind of mental mind-brain theme. And we had fun with that. And we decided that, you know, we'd keep practicing and stuff. And so we, some one thing led to another, and we got a opportunity to play at some other place. And then the big break came when we got an invitation to play at the Cornelia Street Cafe, which is a a local club in Greenwich Village, but it's like really high level music in terms of the quality and so forth. And we had a great time, and we were written up in the New York Times.
I saw that write up actually just the other day.
Right. So it was again part of a science evening, but we were the music. I didn't do the lecture or anything. We were just there to be the band. And so we had that write up, and John Nash was there, and called our psychoanalytic, and it was fun.
And so the name. That was the full version of All in Nut by the Amygdaloids. And like I said, I was chatting with Joe Ledoux, one of the key songwriters for that band recently. And first of all, you heard him chat a little bit about how that band of scientists got together. But I also asked him how their name came to be. And so the name that you guys have settled on is the Amygdaloids. How did you come to that?
Well, the amygdala is the part of the brain that I work on, and so it was kind of a natural thing that we would have called ourselves that. However, it wasn't. It was sort of accidental that we ended up with that. I think we were calling ourselves something we kind of boring and bland, like the Limbic Tones. And we didn't really have a name when we were, when Tyler and I were just playing around. You know, occasionally we would make up some names like Limbic Tones and use that, but it wasn't really a very important part of what we were doing. And then I think it might have been Tyler's partner at the time who said, misremembered our name because the amygdala is part of the limbic system, and she remembered it as the amygdaloid tremens, the limbic tone. And we liked that, you know, misremembering. And so we adopted it and have used it ever since.
That was Joe Ledoux of the Amygdaloids chatting about how their name came to be, possibly one of the most science-y names for a band that I can think of. And they deserve the credit, being all scientists themselves, and in many cases very well established scientists. So their new album, it's called Heavy Mental, and you can find out more about it at the Ledoux Lab website by Googling NYU and Ledoux, spelled L-E-D-O-U-X. Or you can also check out myspace.com/amygdaloids to hear a little bit more of their music, or even to purchase their latest album. And each and every one of their tunes focuses on something sciencey, and in most cases, all kinds of great brain-related songs. They're not too information dense, each of their songs. Their songs focus on one or two ideas or concepts, and they kind of dress it up in a classic rock sound, much like what you just heard with It's All in a Nut. Amazingly, most songs have been inspired by the research of one or more of the lab members. And so I also spoke to Joe Ledoux about that, and he told me about a few of the songs and how the science inspired it.
So All in a Nut is a song about my favorite part of the brain, the amygdala. Amygdala is from the Greek meaning almond, and so the question that the song raises is, why do we feel so afraid? And the answer is, it's all in a nut in your brain. And that's pretty much the whole thing, and, you know, except it's got kind of a slow beginning, but then it rocks in the choruses. Mind-body problem, like a lot of our songs, are love songs who take you know, scientific or philosophical point and write a song around that, and sometimes a humorous way, like in this case. It's a song about a guy who's broken up with his girlfriend, and the girlfriend wants to come back, and he's not sure what to do. His body wants her so, but his mind says no. It just puts the, I mean, it is the mind-body problem in the philosophical sense, but it kind of puts it into a different kind of context than you would read about in the philosophy book. And then the other one you asked about was Memory Pill, and that's emotional, all of them are based on research, but Memory Pill is based on a specific study where we found that we could delete or make inaccessible a specific memory in a rat brain. And the idea is that even in humans, it might be possible to remove or make inaccessible memories that are troubling, or especially in the case of traumatic memories and PTSD. The Memory Pill is not a pill to improve your memory, but a pill about getting rid of your memory that you don't want.
You've just been listening to Joe Ledoux chat about the research that he does and how it inspires some of his songs. In particular, he described the song Memory Pill, that describes a phenomenon that seems straight out of science fiction. And this phenomenon is the ability to target memory erasure with a pill. So being able to delete a single memory with a drug, a consumable drug. In fact, Joe Ledoux was pretty quick to point out to me when we were chatting that this idea is depicted in the film Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And it plays with this kind of science fiction, or maybe really more accurately we should say science nonfiction. The paper that he's referring to was written by Nader, Schaaf, and Ledoux in 2000, and it was published in Nature. So really, really a high-impact paper entitled Fear Memories Require Protein Synthesis in the Amygdala for Reconsolidation After Retrieval. And in this publication, Nader and his team demonstrate that single memories, which are unstable when they are recalled, can be disrupted and thus eliminated. And in that way, you can eliminate that particular memory. The model system here is in rats, and I won't tell you too much more about it because I got asked Joe Ledoux himself to give sort of his two-minute version of this Nature publication, and this is what he had to say.
So Memory Pill was based on a study that was actually done by a Canadian who was in my lab around the year 2000, and his name is Corinne Nader. He's now back in Canada at McGill University. But his he designed a series of studies to look at something called reconsolidation, which, to make a kind of complicated story relatively simple, is when it involves the phenomenon by which a memory becomes unstable when it's retrieved. A practical or maybe common knowledge example of this was in the movie The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where the main character, played by Jim Carrey, was brought into a room and shown pictures that would retrieve different memories. And each time a memory came up, his brain was zapped and the memory was then removed. So our research came out a few years before that, so we didn't get the idea from the movie. I don't know if the movie got their idea from us, but that doesn't matter. When a memory is retrieved, it becomes unstable and has to be stored, again, through a process of protein synthesis. And when that occurs, the memory will then remain in the brain in a more stable way. So in Memory Pill, what we're doing is retrieving memories of fear in rats and giving them a drug that prevents the restorage of the memory through protein synthesis. And this is also a potential treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, because then people who have these traumatic memories might be able to retrieve the memory. And then if we block the restorage of that component of the memory that's active at the moment, then they may be less troubled by those memories in the future.
So does that mean that the memory, that particular memory completely goes away, or it's just less stable?
You know, it may not necessarily go away, but it becomes inaccessible. And so far what it looks like is it's not like it's completely removing the entirety of a memory, but just a small component that's active at the moment. And I know that's kind of hard to understand, but, you know, we do this in rats by creating memories with multiple parts by conditioning the rat to different stimuli. And then the memory now has, you know, three stimuli that are part of that global memory. And then we can selectively present one of the stimuli in the presence of the drug that prevents storage, and only that part of the memory is eliminated. So the experiment goes like this. The rat hears a tone paired with a shock. The next time the rat hears the tone, it expresses fear responses.
Right.
Because it remembers the tone. And if the rat has been given the tone in the presence of the drug that prevents the restorage of the memory, then he no longer...
You've just been listening to Joe Ledoux chat about his research, and now you're going to hear Trace.
From the wrinkles on my forehead with strings that tie to you, in my dream I'm often running to a place that's out of view of every kind of strings that tie to you. Strings that tied you.
Hi, this is Joe Ledoux. I'm from the Amygdaloids. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM.
Just been listening to the Amygdaloids on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. This is My Science Project. And in the past half hour, you've just heard a lot of music and interviews with the band The Amygdaloids. And I spoke in particular with Joe Ledoux of NYU, who's one of the key band members and singer-songwriters. You heard a couple of songs, including All in a Nut, and just there you heard A Trace. Prior to The Trace, you heard Strings That Tie to You, which is a tune written by John Bryan, and it was used in the film Eternal Sunshine of My Spotless Mind, a film where the idea of memories being erased was played with. And in reality, Joe Ledoux plays with that in his lab on a regular basis. Now, we're going to move into the second section of the show here today, but before I do, I just want to remind you that we are doing a giveaway competition, email us and get free stuff kind of routine. So like I said earlier, Julia and I really wanted to get some more listener feedback because we were feeling a little bit lonely. And so what we've requested is that you do is email us at myscienceproject. Our email address is myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. Send us your ideas for a upcoming show and send us your mailing address. And if you're among the first three to do that, you'll receive a pair of tickets to Science World's Omnimax Extra Big Movie Nights, which are double bills on Friday and Saturday nights. So go ahead and do that. Send us an email at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. One more time, that's myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. Send us some ideas. We'd love to follow up on them for shows, and shows that'll make you happy. Now, in the second part of the show, I said that I wanted to take a look at nepotism and altruism, and I had a confession. And here's the thing. I want to do some shameless promotion of some music released by a couple of people that I know. First of all, a friend by the name of Andy Swan from Toronto recently released an album entitled Andy Swan's Ottawa, which I've got right here in my hands. And my very own brother, Andrew Mullen, recently produced an album that was released just last night in Montreal. And that album is by the band Kids Eat Crayons, and the album is called Kids Eat Crayons Is for Lovers. And I'm going to play a little bit of that. So I've got all this new release, cutting edge, hot off the press, personally meaningful music, but I wanted to make it relevant for those of you who tune into my science project to hear about science. So what did I do? Well, I cracked open ye olde Oxford English Dictionary, and I looked up nepotism. And for starters, I had a definition for nepotism that reads, undue favor in appointing one's own relatives to office. All right. Then I looked up altruism. And the definition of altruism is regard for others as a principle of action or unselfishness. So there's something a little bit kinder about the term altruism, and Andy Swan isn't exactly a relative of mine, so maybe I'll go with the term altruism, that I'm really on principle acting out of a regard for others with my music selections in the next 20 minutes. But what I did do is make an effort to collect some tales of animal behavior that display either altruism or nepotism. And in fact, in the animal kingdom, this is referred to typically as kin selection. And while I know that it's a dangerous and slippery slope to argue that kin selection or that sort of behavior is natural or innate, I'm going to go with it for today, and I'm going to give you some examples of nepotism in the animal kingdom. But before I do that, I'm going to play the recently released, hot off the press, Kids Eat Crayons album produced by Andrew Mullen. This song is The Shape of the Sound.
Thank you.
Kids Eat Crayons singing The Shape of the Sound. And it's a band out of Montreal, recent released album. So recent, it was released last night. Album dropped last night. The album is Kids Eat Crayons is for Lovers by Kids Eat Crayons. And if you want to find out more about these guys, check out www.kidseatcrayons.com. And if there's time, I'll play another tune before the hour is up. But I'm playing these tunes because it's produced by my brother, so this is sort of blatant nepotism, or if you want to be kind to me, call it altruism. And so what I'm going to do is just pepper this with a few stories about animals and the same type of behavior so that I don't feel so alone, so guilty. And monkeys are what's going to make me feel less guilty. We love monkeys at My Science Project. Love them. And actually in this story, it's not really monkeys, it's chimps, but never mind, that's not important. As humans, we're frequently compared, our behavior is frequently compared to that of chimpanzees. And I'm going to do it again. We've seen lots of examples, probably covered by the newspapers, of jealousy, love, greed, and so on. And now you can add nepotism to the list of things that chimps or monkeys do. But with chimps, nepotism is important to their social organization. But new research suggests that the ability to cooperate extends beyond the family. So it's a bit more than nepotism that benefits these chimps, just as is the case with humans, where we are generous and unselfish towards more than just our immediate relatives. So this is where the researchers got involved. They studied over 5,025 hours of chimpanzee life, and they did that in the Kibale National Park in Uganda. The researcher was Kevin Langerberger, who's an anthropologist at University of Michigan, no doubt armed with a team of undergraduate, graduate, and postdoctoral researchers. They observed, in those 5,025 hours, 753 aggressive coalitions and 421 instances of sharing. Now, what they did notice as well is that chimps who shared a mother were far more likely to cooperate with each other than those who did not share a mother. In contrast, there was no evidence to suggest that chimps that shared a father were likely to cooperate, or at least more likely to cooperate than those who don't share a father. And that might be due to the fact that chimp fathers do not normally stay with their offspring, so they wouldn't really have a chance to determine whether the young chimpanzee sitting next to them has the same father or not. And there's also sort of the issue of how chimps tend to reproduce, which is that the father doesn't stay very long with a single mother, so you don't have families fathered by the same father. So maternal brothers are rare, and due to the breeding habits of these animals, most of the cooperative behaviors observed between Langerberger were therefore between non-relatives, suggesting that chimps cooperate for selfish reasons. So they do cooperate with their immediate family, but since there's so much cooperation taking place with these other animals, there must be other reasons, and these researchers hypothesize that perhaps it is because they expect reciprocity. So while I'm shamelessly promoting the music of my brother and Kids Eat Crayons, maybe later on I can demand reciprocity. So here is another tune by Kids Eat Crayons. This is the Dying at Home song.
The smell of kids, a pull-out couch, stove in the fridge, dying at home, dying at home. The thick yellow light closes my eyes. Creaking floors sing lullabies, dying at home, dying at home, oh, dying at home, dying at home, oh, dying at home, dying at home. How long? Far at least, a lifetime at most. I long to meet my goal. arms. Live my life under the sofa. I will die in your arms. Can you smell me receding? I will die in your arms. Feel me breathing like a family dog out to the farm.
That was the Dying at Home song by Kids Eat Crayons, an album released yesterday. Did I mention that already? In Montreal. And the band is Kids Eat Crayons. The album is Kids Eat Crayons is for Lovers. And you can check out more, buy CDs, listen more at kidseatcrayons.com. And I'm going to follow that up with a little more research on altruism and nepotism, but this time not in monkeys, instead in ants. Insects always seem to offer all kinds of behavioral anecdotes. And research on ants by Liselotte Sundström at the University of Helsinki demonstrated for the first time what has always been expected, that worker ants favor individuals to whom they are more closely related. It is often difficult to demonstrate in animal populations because it relies on the ability of the animal to recognize their own kin. Sundström and Mintumaria Hanonen looked at 10 colonies of ants, each having two queens, and they examined the genetic relatedness of queen, workers, and eggs over time. And they also quantified the share of eggs that could be accredited to each queen. So they were looking at genetic similarities between the queen, the worker, and eggs, and hypothesizing that if the eggs had more genetics in common with the queen and worker bees, that suggested that the queen dominated. And in this way, they've demonstrated that over time, that the queen was more related to the workers, that the queen who was more related to the workers gained in share. So most likely, relatedness is determined based on scent. And I've got another example here of research identifying a scent related to kin selection or related to altruism in animals. And there's a number of genetic explanations for altruism and nepotism. And Richard Dawkins wrote a book called The Selfish Gene, and in that he argues that nepotism perpetuates the familial gene or genome. And claiming that favoritism towards your immediate family, like your parents or your offspring or your sibling, seeks to preserve the genes shared within this group of closely related individuals. Accordingly, more distant relatives or strangers are less likely to benefit by such altruistic gestures. And there's, again, another story among ants. In this case, young queen fire ants are systematically murdered by their servants when their genotype or genetic composition differs from that of the servants. This would be a classic case of strategic preservation of a particular genotype. So, you know, where there's similarity between the fire ant and the worker, they're left alone. Where there's difference, the queen is dominated, no doubt, by the odds of the workers. And in this case, it's the genotype carried by the server ants that makes that decision. The catch is that server ants are actually related to the queen. So why such a barbaric reaction? And how do these seemingly identical ants know what the genes of other ants look like? After all, genes themselves aren't exactly visible. It's only the products of what they encode that have any sort of physical or visible presence. And Laurent Keller from the University of Lausanne and Kenneth Ross from the University of Georgia discovered a detectable indication of genotype in the case of the fire ants. It is a scent that signals kinship and marks out those without it for death. And it is indeed this gene that also causes aggressive behavior. So this here is an example of research that provides one of the first and crucial links between behavioral evolution and genetics. So keeping with the theme of nepotism, I'm going to play the track number one from Andy Swan's album, Andy Swan's Ottawa, and this tune is called If My Daddy Could See Me Now.
A baby lion does not know pain until he's lost his pride. When I don't say
treasure chest for one moment. Blessed if my daddy could see me now. A tactile prize, hard to define. I can't find the words to say. Engraved in stone, like father, like son. I wish he was here today. A treasure chest for one moment. Blessed if my daddy could see me now.
That was Andy Swan from Andy Swan's Ottawa singing If My Daddy Could See Me Now. A great new release, a friend of mine. I hope you enjoyed that. That's Andy Swan's Ottawa. Now, before we wrap up, we've just got a few minutes left and a stereoscopic readout is coming up. I just want to let you know about a couple science-y events in the city that you might be interested in. First off, Science World has got a new exhibition on called Seedy Science. And it looks at the biology, the complex biology of seeds. There are six key topics in that show, and they are beans, seed signals, seeds from food plants, seeds with commercial uses, poisonous seeds among us, and on the high seas. So that's at Science World until February right now. Also, this Friday, November 16th, is Science World After Dark series, and that is for adults. In fact, it's adults only. From 6:30 to 10 p.m. at Science World. There is beer and wine involved. You might enjoy that. Admission is $16, and that's down at Science World this Friday night, the Science After Dark series. I'd also like to point out that at the Vancouver Institute, there is a great event coming up on the earthquake threat to British Columbia, prevented by Dr. Rogers, who's a graduate of UBC and the University of Hawaii. And that will be on November 24th at 8:15 p.m. in Lecture Hall number 2 of the Woodward Instructional Resources Center at the University of British Columbia. And what else can I tell you? There's more fun things to do. Yeah, on Tuesday, the 20th, is a public science initiative event called Regenesis. And it's not your usual public forum. It's a forum that involves panelists who are scientists. It involves discussion. It involves watching TV. In fact, it involves watching a new TV series called Regenesis, which you can find out more about at regenesistv.com. And this is a television program that, well, when I saw a little bit of it, it seemed not unlike CSI, but instead of forensic crime solving, you've got a little more science-based puzzle solving, and they're going to use that to stimulate discussion. So if you want to hear a little bit more about that, there's you can get more information by emailing info@genomebc.com. And the final thing that I want to do is remind you that we're doing a little giveaway. We're giving away passes to Science World Omnimax, and if you want to check that out, all you have to do is email us at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca with your questions or ideas for a show. So, before I say goodbye, I want to thank you for listening. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You've been listening to My Science Project. I'm going to leave you now with another song by Andy Swan from Andy Swan's Ottawa called Brian Jones.
Who played the blues on his guitar? Occupation, rock and roll star. He grew up middle class in a London town. Went to high school, played in the band. Who carried his weight underneath his eyes? Squint a little bit in the studio light. He cut his